Good morning. Can those of you back there hear me? Yes, thumbs up. Life is good. Nice to be here with you. Beautiful morning. I'm going to talk today about an old song. Same old song. Different meaning. Oh. It's called The Song of Zazen, written by a fellow named Hakuin. My goodness, there are a lot of people here. Nice. Help yourself. Perfect seat for you. Our practice seems to be popular. It appears that people know that there is some need for peace. We know this in our hearts. We know this when we look outside of our hearts. So people come here. And I hope that we cultivate peace here. And the Song of Zazen is about this cultivation. It was written by a fellow named Hakuin, who is a 17th century Zen monk from Japan. Hakuin is a Rinzai teacher, so I don't know if I'm allowed to talk to him here in a Soto temple, but I think so. There are two main schools of Zen. One is Rinzai and one is Soto, so we're the Soto side, and I won't talk about those distinctions too much, but Hakuin is a very influential figure. And this Song of Zazen is really a paean or a celebration or a exhortation to practice meditation. It represents a pretty devotional side of our teaching. So if you have to leave right now at the prospect of devotional language, it's okay. But if you're brave, you can stay here. So we might say this is a more religious-sounding text, another way to put it. And this devotional way of looking at our practice that elevates it and makes it look really important has value. Sometimes Zen teachers will say, Zazen is good for nothing. And that has value too. But sometimes they will say things like, those who try Zazen even once wipe away beginningless crimes, as this text does. So, we have various sides of teaching. In case you don't know much about Zen, you will find out that there's a lot of paradox and a lot of contradiction in our practice, in our teaching. The teachings and the words of this tradition are medicine. The practice is medicine. What we do is we alleviate suffering. This whole tradition is founded on the alleviation of suffering. It is therapeutic. It is not really anything outside of that. So the words that we say here are not intended to arrive at some fundamental truth. They're intended to alleviate suffering. So they may not always be the right applicable thing. That's why they're various. Some people are very stuck on their viewpoint. Most of us, most of the time. So we have teachings about how not to get stuck. And many of us feel discouraged. And we think, oh, there's so much problems in the world. I don't even know what to do, but the last thing that I should be doing is sitting down and doing nothing. Zazen. How could that help? So we have devotional teachings like the Song of Zazen, which say, yes, it does help. It's worth it. And we come here together and we sit down together because when you're sitting alone, you go, what am I even doing? Sometimes you might just have some deep peace, but sometimes you may think, what am I even doing? And the answer is, I don't really know. But it seems to be helpful. So this Song of Zazen, I'm pretty confident that some elements will seem really weird. Or like, I don't know what that means. I invite you to just let that be the case. That's okay. So hopefully there'll be some things in here that are encouraging, and hopefully we can shed some light on it while we're sitting here today. I do want to chant this. I'm going to send these around. I made enough for probably not even enough, one for every two people here. So maybe take one per pair, and you can look on together. It may not make it back to you in the back, but you can hear it, because we will recite this together. So I will say just a couple things about a couple words in here. One, Mahayana. Mahayana means great vehicle. So Zen is a type of Mahayana Buddhism. The basic idea of Mahayana Buddhism is that our practice is to liberate everyone from suffering and everything from suffering forever. So, no problem, a small goal. But the point being that our practice is unlimited. Our practice is unlimited in our doing of it and in the opportunity that we have to do it and in the connections that it has to everything. This is Mahayana, great vehicle. There's also a word in here which means samadhi, which basically means deep meditative absorption. So, with that, I just want to saying something about chanting. So I would like to chant this text together, and if you've never chanted in the Zen style, I'm pretty sure you can figure out how it works pretty fast, because it's just one note over and over again, so it's not very complicated. And I remember the first time I heard Zen chanting, I came here for morning Zazen in 2002, and I just wanted to meditate. I had the pain in my heart. I wanted peace. I came to meditate, and it was very still, but it was weird because people were bowing and all this weird stuff that I felt kind of uncomfortable with. And then someone said, you know, we're having a service now. You could stay or leave, whatever you like. And I thought, I'm leaving. Are you kidding? And I got my shoes on. As I was stepping out the door, they started chanting. And I just about ran. But times change, and now I spend about 10 or 15 minutes a day chanting texts from this tradition, and they uphold my personal central value, which is the alleviation of suffering for everyone forever, and that I can contribute to that. So, anyway, I invite you to jump in, however you are, to this chant. I will chant the title, and then we can go from there. Song of Zazen. All beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is water. Apart from water, there is no ice. Apart from beings, no Buddha. How sad that people ignore the near and search for truth afar, like someone in the midst of water crying out in thirst, like a child of a wealthy home wandering among the poor. Lost on dark paths of ignorance, we wander through the six worlds, from dark path to dark path. When shall we be freed from birth and death? Oh, the Zazen of the Mahayana, to this the highest praise, devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas, all have their source in Zazen. Those who try Zazen even once wipe away beginningless crimes. Where are all the dark paths then? The pure land itself is near. Those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings without end.
Much more those who turn about and bear witness to self-nature, self-nature that is no nature, go far beyond mere doctrine. Here effect and cause are the same. The way is neither two nor three, with form that is no form, going and coming we are never astray. With thought that is no thought, singing and dancing are the voice of the law. Boundless and free is the sky of samadhi, bright the full moon of wisdom. Truly is anything missing now. Nirvana is right here before our eyes. This very place is the lotus land. This very body, the Buddha.
Beautiful. Listen to you guys. Voices together. It's a wonderful thing for people to use their voices together. You know, I've chanted this many times, and I just realized it's more than a devotion to Zazen. This is about a devotion to just this moment. But since I just figured that out, I'm going to give the talk I wrote. So I think of this poem, this song, as a sandwich. Sort of. The bread, this is very silly, is that right here and now is Buddha. This is it. This place, where we are, your moment of awareness, is always realization. Or for anyone who was at my talk a few weeks ago, it has complete realized nature. This is always true. And so there's a lot of this language both at the beginning and the end of the poem. And in the middle of the poem, the meat, if you will, is that we can go from suffering to peace. From suffering to liberation from suffering. And that the way recommended by this poem for making that step is Zazen. And that it does not take any time to do it. It is immediate. So we have this idea in Buddhism of, you might say, immanence. All beings by nature are Buddha. And we all know, of course, that means all beings except for me, right? Because I must be the flawed one who's extracted from the universe. Or maybe we don't all know that, but it's pretty common for us to feel that way. We are, as someone around here likes to say, the bump on the universe. But this poem is saying, no, it's not so. Everything already is infinitely connected. And Buddhahood is just knowing infinite connectedness. It's already true. Or as I was saying in the last talk, it's always already thus. The complete realized nature is always already thus. Now you may think that sounds weird. And this really is more of an expression of people's experience. So people from many, many different kinds of practice traditions, religious and non-religions, or even non-practice traditions, just realize in some moment that everything is just infinitely connected and as it is. But we have a lot of people who talk about this in the Buddhist tradition because we do a lot of practice to cultivate it. Because it's liberative. And this connection, you know, in Mahayana Buddhism, we basically say what made Buddha Buddha is the realization that he was just part of everything, that it was all connected. He touched the ground at the moment of realization. All beings, the whole earth, and myself are liberated. The things that come together to make us who we are infinite. We feel like it's an us perceiving some unfolding thing that's outside of us, but the tendency to perceive that we are a thing observing other things is just a tendency. It's just a habit, like the habit of tying your shoes. You don't know you're doing. Do you actually know? Have you ever tried to teach someone to tie a shoe? It's actually really hard. You tie shoes. It's just a habit. The mind makes self and other sort of a habit. Not a terrible habit, but it is a limiting habit if we're unaware that it's a habit. This language that all beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is water. Apart from water, there's no ice, and apart from beings, no Buddha. There's not some Buddha that's going to be somewhere else. The first line of Dogen's Genjo Koan is, as all dharmas are Buddha dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice and birth and death, and Buddhas and sentient beings. The reason that there are any kind of things is that they're Buddha. That's pretty good. You're Buddha. If you're the kind of person who values Buddha, this might feel kind of supportive, or maybe daunting, or maybe unbelievable. I don't know. But you're all already complete. A complete expression of everything. Connected to everything. Supported by everything. All was true. When we feel like we're just barely trying to get through the day, can we realize we are supported by everything in this moment? Everything came together to be the way it is. At the beginning of the Fukan Zazengi, the universal recommendation for Zazen, Dogen says, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. So it's already here. So this is a language that's designed to be encouraging when we are in pain. We can remember that when we're doing something really, we've done something terrible. Oh, I just yelled at my kids. We just feel terrible. You're still Buddha. You still have an opportunity. Hakuin says, how sad that people ignore the near and search for truth afar. Like someone in the midst of water crying out in thirst. Like someone in the midst of water crying out in thirst. Here we are in realization, thinking, as soon as I get everyone to do it the way I know it should be done, everything will be fine. And as we know, when we finally get things accomplished the way we want to, everything is always resolved, right? And our pain is gone forever. It's great. You just find that perfect partner and you never have to worry about any difficulty with relationships ever again. All married people know this. How sad that people ignore the near. The near, right now. What's near? The only thing. It's not even near because there's no distance between you and the moment. It can't be near because it's not separate at all. But we only have language. How sad that people ignore the near and search for truth afar. Like someone in the midst of water crying out in thirst. The opportunity is always here. A monk asked Xuanzà, what is it and why is it so hard to realize? Xuanzà said, because it's too close. So we always have this Buddhahood, Buddhiness, the Buddha Dharma nature of all phenomena, which includes us, always here. Can we remember this? When we're churning through our day, what happens if you think, I'm Buddha? Might it affect the way you conduct yourself? Is this the way Buddha would do it? WWBD. But it's so clearly the case that we all know from our experience that although maybe you say, yeah, I am Buddha. Maybe you feel that. Or maybe you go, I see the value of that. But you might go, yeah, but Ben, I'm really upset this morning. Someone in this room is in pain. Probably a lot of people in this room are in pain up right now. And everyone in this room has felt pain recently, and a lot of people outside of this room have felt a lot of pain recently. This is real. Lost on dark paths of ignorance, we wander through the six worlds from dark path to dark path. When will we be freed from birth and death? This is the language of the Song of Zazen. Lost on dark paths of ignorance, we wander through the six worlds from dark path to dark path. When will we be freed from birth and death? He uses three separate standard sets of teachings from Buddhism about pain, about the suffering of life, about the fact that people just keep doing stuff that doesn't work at all. Look at the world. Human beings do not generally do things, well, they often do things, but so many things that we do just don't make any sense. And we usually think, oh, it's the other people who are doing the thing that don't make sense. But I paid a fair amount of attention to my mind, and a good part of the time I'm doing stuff that doesn't make any sense. Maybe we accumulate habits and defenses when we're young. They become hardened, and we act out of them impulsively. This is called karma. This is called karma. It's what, if you're at my last talk, is what makes us imagine a world where our suffering has to occur. The imaginary nature is constructed out of these habits of walking down these dark paths of not really seeing what the world is, not seeing our connection, not seeing our opportunity for compassion. When will we be free? We be freed from birth and death. And this is just real. You know, you may be doing really well. That's great. If you're doing really well, then you can open up to some other people's dark paths and maybe just be there with them. And if you're in a lot of pain, this teaching in this thing is to say, yes, I know. Hakuin Zenji, who wrote this poem, had a lot of suffering in his life. He was probably, we would say now, he probably would have been diagnosed with pretty severe mental illness. It's hard to say. But his life was, he had all kinds of tremendous ups and downs. But he kept coming back to this practice because he believed in the possibility of his liberation and the liberation of the people around him. He knew these dark paths very well. So we have this imminence of Buddhahood. It's right here. You, right here, are Buddha. And we have this truth that we know that there's a lot of pain both in our own hearts and all around us. How could we all be Buddha if it looks like this? He says, lost on dark paths of ignorance, we wander through the six realms from dark path to dark path. When will we be freed from birth and death? Oh, the Zazen of the Mahayana. To this the highest praise. This is what we call a turn when you're studying poetry. A turn. He acknowledges the pain. He says, oh yeah, the Zazen. Oh yeah. I've got something I can do that I know works from my experience. To this the highest praise. Devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas all have their source in Zazen. So the paramitas are a bunch of different practices which promote well-being. So he's saying it all this tradition that he's participating in, his whole Zen practice, is rooted in Zazen. Just sitting. Now, Zazen means a lot of things, and I was kind of innocent. I went to a Rinzai teacher in Los Angeles many years ago, and Hakuin is a Rinzai teacher, and I said, you know, something about what I was doing, and he said, what's your practice? And I said, Zazen. And he said, well, that could be a lot of different things. And I was like, oh, really? I didn't know. I just thought I sat here. But you know, Zazen can be koan practice, where you have a deep, sort of impenetrable question that you work with a teacher, and you take that koan into your practice, into your Zazen. Or Zazen can be just mindfulness of breathing, basically. We often teach Zazen is just sit and observe the breathing. Or Zazen can be just sitting, where there's no object of concentration or meditation, where we just are here. And it can be other things too. But here, he says, whatever we're putting into this category of Zazen, to this, the highest praise. I feel this, guys. I feel it. I've done a bunch of Zazen. I've done a bunch of other stuff. I've yelled at people. I've used a lot of drugs from a long time ago. I've done things that were kind, and I've done things that were really harmful. I've tried to promote my own well-being a lot of different ways. A lot of them really, really didn't work, particularly the one with the drugs, by the way. So I'm not recommending that. It failed. It failed me. Trying to be happy by just imagining that if I find the right person, then I'll be happy did not work. All kinds of things didn't work. Trying to believe that some other person would have all the answers and be able to explain it to me didn't work. Doesn't work. And I don't know if I would say Zazen works, but it has been liberative. To this, I do give the highest praise. And I don't, I mean, I can use some technical language to talk about why, but ultimately I just know I've devoted myself to this practice daily for years, and my capacity to enact what matters to me is liberated through this action. So he says when he makes this turn, the pivot from suffering, from these dark paths to peace, the pivot is Zazen. So then he makes some claims that I'll almost say are outrageous. They're so great. the Zazen of the Mahayana, to this the highest praise. Devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas all have their source in Zazen. Those who try Zazen even once wipe away beginningless crimes. Where are all the dark paths then? The pure land itself is near. Those who hear this truth even once gain blessings without end. Much more so those who turn about and bear witness to self-nature which is no nature. I mean, this is some lofty language. Or what are we, at church or what? But there is some truth. Those who try Zazen even once wipe away beginningless crimes. So the character, I couldn't find the Chinese and Japanese characters for this, but I know that the most common character for crime in Japanese also means punishment. They're the same thing. And this actually, you might think if you know something about Indian Buddhism, you'd be like, oh, that sounds like karma. That's what they're talking about. But actually, the character long predates the incursion of Indian thought into China. So the idea that when you commit an act of harm, you suffer, and that suffering is connected to harm is deeply embedded here. Now, you might say, well, wait a minute. We don't want to blame people who are suffering for doing horrible things, and we don't. That's not the point at all. It is really not the point. The point is to see that when we have pain in our hearts, it will produce more pain. It will produce actions. And if we take care of the pain in our heart, we can produce less pain. That's the fundamental teaching of karma. And that's why one moment of Zazen can wipe away beginningless crimes. Because the same reason that we are Buddha is the same reason that we're suffering. Because we're infinitely connected to everything. So in this moment where infinite conditions come together to produce who we are, and we're about to yell at somebody or just say something kind of snippy, or maybe not say anything because we think that'll really get under their nerves, or even just sit by ourselves and think, I'm right, and these stupid Republicans are wrong. That's pain. That's alienation. That's separation. And in a moment of zazen, in a moment of seeing everything that's here, the phenomena of the moment and our own heart and our own mind, we can wipe away one moment of beginningless conditioning. This is like in the Yogacara language, we'd say there are seeds of suffering that are planted and they fruit. In the moment of seeing the fruiting, you can see it and its karma is exhausted. And if you don't plant another seed like that, the karma is exhausted. The way Buddha puts this in the earliest texts is, action that is not directly seen will be reproduced. That's why mindfulness works. So, powerful. When we just see our own suffering in a moment, or whatever is coming up in our heart in a moment in zazen, we're doing something that is connected to beginningless human difficulty. Something really liberative, something really powerful and important. It's not just, oh, you know, I was just sitting here and then I got to feel a little better. You know, I had a guy come to me, you know, I'm always talking about this Mahayana stuff here, if I'm sitting here, and we had a retreat, and I had a meeting with him, you know, we have Dokusan, and I was sitting there, and he said, you know, I liked your talk, but I'm really not interested in, you know, like trying to alleviate suffering for everyone in the world. I'm just here to try and deal with my pain. And I was like, well, that's okay. That's okay. It's going to liberate everyone anyway. You know, if you're in less pain, you're more able to support people. That's not complicated. But on the other hand, it is helpful to remind ourselves that our practice is for everyone because it opens it up more. It just opens it up more. We don't have to feel so alone, so cut off. So then the other claim here that really, I go, what? It says, I'll read this passage again. Devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas all have their source in zazen. Those who try zazen even once wipe away beginningless crimes. Where are all the dark paths then? The pure land itself is near. Those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings without end. I'm like, really? No! You have to come here and sit, and you have to do retreats. If you want liberation, work for it. It's worth it. And I believe that. So I encourage you to come back next week and sit, and to come here and do retreats, because this practice is liberative. And it is more liberative. I heard a great quote the other day from Desmond Tutu. Someone said, you're very busy. Well, no, they said, how much time do you spend a day praying? And Desmond Tutu said, you know, I am so busy. I couldn't possibly get by unless I prayed for at least 2 hours a day. I'm so busy. How could I possibly do it if I didn't spend 2 hours a day praying? This is one of the great leading lights of liberation and social justice in the world. And the only way he can do it is by making sure he spends a lot of time doing his practice. So, what do you want to get done? Gotta clean the house. You can clean the house liberated. Do some zazen. But I'm on a tangent. Sorry. Those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings to that end. This is a very good reminder to me. I have a neighbor who I really love, and she has read some books by Pema Chodron. And she's like, it's great. It profoundly changed my life. And it's really, really important to me. And I'm like, man, I've spent thousands of hours doing Zazen. Maybe I should have just read two Pema Chodron books. For real. But I don't know. I don't know. Her liberation is her own. Her life is her own. If she wants to just touch this teaching and that is meaningful for her too, that's great. She gained blessings without end from a little contact. From a little contact. On Thursday night, I went down to the 4th Precinct in North Minneapolis to practice Zazen because, I don't know if you know, there's been a big protest happening there because a young black man named Jamar Clark was shot by the police last week. And, you know, I saw the news and that there had been a lot of conflict between police and protesters at the 4th Precinct on Wednesday. And I saw the pain of it. I saw people who were afraid, who were angry, who were despairing. I saw violence. And I thought, maybe there's something I can do. And so I came over here after work and I got my robe, which I've never worn outside of this building or outside of some kind of Zen temple. But I thought, I don't know, maybe this means something to people if I put this on. And I went there, and there were several hundred people there, and I just sat down on the curb and practiced Zazen for a couple hours. Although a lot of people wanted to talk to me. and I talked to them. And then I didn't. And I got the feeling that people found that very touching. A lot of people communicated to me that they found it very touching. And I didn't really do very much at all. I mean, in case it's not apparent, all I went was I put on a piece of clothing and I sat down for a couple hours and sat still. We don't know how this works. We don't know how many people just drive by this building and because there is a Zen center, feel like there is some possibility of peace. By sitting there on that curb, my point wasn't, I'm here and I'm peaceful and you're not. And everyone knew that. They knew that it meant they could be peaceful. So, at the end of this song of Zazen, Hakuin brings us back to the imminence of Buddhiness. Singing and dancing are the voice of the law. Singing and dancing are the voice of the law. Boundless and free is the sky of samadhi, bright the full moon of wisdom. Truly is anything missing now? This very, right before our eyes is nirvana. This very place is the lotus land, this very body, the Buddha. This is language that's repeated in the 30 verses of Vasubandhu. He ends with a very similar construction. Here Hakuin says, this very place is the lotus land, this very body, the Buddha. Vasubandhu says, this is the inconceivable, wholesome, unstained, constant realm. The blissful body of liberation, the Dharma body of the Buddha. This. He means not just like his this, but whatever this you've got. And both of them say it's the land, that it's what we perceive, and it's this body. And what they don't even mention is the mind. Didn't we want it to be about the mind? The mind thinks, shouldn't this be about the mind? Enough about me. What about me? Yes, the body. Similarly, some of you may know I like the song of the grass for Permitage. At the end, he says, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. The last line of every one of these poems is about the body. Coming into the body. This practice of Zazen is one of being deeply embodied, knowing what your body is doing, knowing the sensations in it. last time I gave a talk, the practice that we did was about really being aware of the sensations in the body as the most effective way to begin to move toward touching the imminence of Buddhahood. We can just do simple tasks. Cleaning, cooking, washing dishes, holding steering wheels, holding handlebars, moving feet on the ground, changing diapers, typing. Feel the body doing it. This moves us closer into the imminence of this moment. The ineffable wonder that's always available. So I think that's what I'd like to say today. Thank you all. I will invite questions or comments or any kind of words or expressions that feel good to you. And if you're sitting anywhere, I'm going to invite you to speak loudly so people everywhere can hear you. Because your voice matters. Yes. Good question. I like it. Nirvana means non-suffering, peace. I'll do my best. There's an old sutra. The Buddha taught 33 synonyms for nirvana, 33 same words for nirvana. And I don't have it memorized, but he says it's peaceful, it's calm, it's liberation. It's the destination that I lead people to. It's non-suffering. It's not harming. It's kind. It's compassionate. It's the path leading to the destination that I teach. So, joy, peace. That's nirvana. Thank you for your question. Anyone else?
Thank you. This is going to come out very confused, so I'll say a few words and then I'll stop spreading confusion. Of course, yesterday you and I were also there doing Zazen.
At the Fourth Precinct.
At the Fourth Precinct. And yes, this feeling of peace was certainly part of it, but it was also a question of listening to what people were saying and taking in the messages that they were delivering and learning from that. And I think that's probably where I'll stop.
That's really good, though, Jeff, in that this practice of Zazen is deep presence. When we practice sensory awareness, we're listening to the way the world is. When we're consumed with our conditioned thinking, we're not listening to the way the world is very well. So when we went to practice Zazen at the Fourth Precinct, yes, it wasn't about, I'm going to go here and I'm going to have my peace, and you guys can watch me have peace. No. Not even close. The practice is total presence. Total presence. Whatever's here. So yes, deep listening. Thank you.
A little bit about the sixth world.
The sixth world, yeah. So in this Song of Zazen, Hakuin says, lost on dark paths of ignorance, we wander through the six worlds, from dark path to dark path. So the six worlds are, they come from the oldest Buddhist teachings and probably predate the Buddhist teachings, and they represent types of worlds in which a person can be reborn in these teachings. So they are the realm of hell, the realm of animals, the realm of people, the realm of hungry ghosts, the realm of gods, and the realm of fighting spirits. And generally speaking, and these are understood by people around here to represent psychological states. Like, you might say, I think I know what it is like to be in hell. Or, maybe you don't, but if you feel like you've got everything going on, you might have some feeling of what it's like to be in the God realm. Or if you think, I'm going to get you guys, and I'm going to show you how it's right, and I'm going to win, you might have some sense of what it's like to be in the fighting spirits realm. But I will say that it appears in the earliest Buddhist teachings, there really is a clear sense that they understood them to be actual states of rebirth and actual places. Interestingly, from my studies, the earliest pivot to viewing them as psychological is in what many of you know is my beloved Yogacara set of teachings. But I won't go into that. Anyway, you can view it however you want. But we do know that people experience hellish things. And we have the teaching of the six realms to remember that that's real. That, you know, there are people in Syria, it's really bad. It's really bad. And we have an opportunity to reach out and help those people. And there are other people who think, I've really got it all figured out, and everything's cool, and I don't want anything impinging on it. They're living in the God realm. And we want to have compassion for them and realize, yeah, they think that's the safe place to be. They don't realize what this teaching states is that when you're in the God realm, what's next is hell. So this is just an opportunity to kind of see the range of human experience and be available to it.
I would like to actually, if you could expand a little bit more on, you had touched on, and forgive me if I misquote, but you touched something on karma, and like if you have like hate or pain in your heart, then that's how you're going to ask people.
Yeah, so the idea of karma is an intimate relationship between feeling or emotion and intention and action. So those things really go together. We tend to have emotions. They create intentional impulses, and then we do things out of those impulses. And those impulses are conditioned, so they tend to produce similar impulses. So, for example, if someone yells at me, I often will have a very defensive response, and I might think, oh my gosh, is something wrong with me? What's wrong with them? And I have a kind of a knot of feelings, feeling like maybe I'm wrong, they must be wrong, I've got to defend myself. And then when that happens, if I'm not aware that it's happening, I will tend to have similar responses to similar things in the future. And so we receive stimulus like this when we're young, and we have similar responses throughout our lives. And we have big brains, so we make huge stories out of it, about which we have total conviction. And really the idea, the teaching of karma in Buddhism is to say you don't have to just repeat the pattern. That's actually, I would say, for early Buddhism, is the fundamental purpose of the whole thing. You say you don't have to just repeat the pattern of your karma. You do have empowerment. You can take a moment to see your own intentional and emotional state and observe it so that its karma is exhausted, and in that moment plant a seed of compassionate awareness, which is principally towards your own pain. And that is the main liberative process that mindfulness does. Is it, you look thoughtful. Do you want to say anything more about that?
No.
Okay, cool. Well, I think we've reached the hour of the next step of the morning. I would just like to say how wonderful to spend some time practicing with you guys this morning. And the most wonderful thing is I'll get to practice with most of you again soon. So thank you all very much, and we'll have announcements. Yeah.
listen to a story about a man named Ted, a long-haired North Dakota boy who lived his life in dread. Then one day when he was running from law school, he came out of the woods looking pretty cool. Transformed, that is. Burning sage, sitting still. Well, the first thing you know, old Ted's a Dharma heir. The kinfolk said, yeah, it took you 40 years. Said, the Zen Center's the place I want to be. It doesn't matter, I started this trip back in 73. Shoveling snow. Wearing robes. Pulling weeds. Well, now it's time I end this tale, much to Ted's chagrin. He'd like to thank you kindly for giving Zaz and a spin. You're all invited back next week for Rahatsu Shashin. And to quote Ted, desperate creatures make good Zen students. Ted's open for Daka-san. Bodhisattva ideals, that is. Set a spell. Take your shoes off. You all join up now. You hear?